on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Good morning, football fans, especially those mothers who love the game of Australian rules football at the highest level. It's a rainy day in Melbourne, almost perfect to grab mum for lunch, afternoon tea, or maybe cook her a special dinner. I'm sure that breakfast in bed has already been ticked off. You won't be ticked off if you listen to the next 2 hours of football review. It's all about what happened inside the chalked oval. And every Sunday morning, myself, Mark Fine, and Robert Shaw, resume too long to go through now, go through those games that have already been played. With the Friday game looked at in full by others, we concentrate on Saturday football. And Shorey, for the first time in a long time, but as an ode to the past, we had six games on a Saturday.
We did. Made it really difficult for us, Mark. But we'll get through that. Happy Mother's Day. Happy I rang my mum this morning.
I'm off to Yum Cha straight after
she's
here.
She's off to church. You know,
that's our church. We pray at the holy altar of the prawn dim sim.
Yeah, it's great. The mums are out there. Like, a lot of people don't know our demographics show that we've got a cult following of the mothers from 40 to 60 years of age, don't we, Mark? Because they don't know what we look like. We're on radio, but yeah, we've got a good following. So happy Mother's Day to everyone. I've got four daughters that are mums, so it's a special day for them too.
There's plenty of mums around my joint as well. Mother's Day, you're a beauty, mums. A whole lot of you. But we've got six games to look at.
Gee.
And we're going to knock all of them off. We've focused on a few of the Victorian-based games over the last couple of weeks. But let's get stuck right in. So all six, because all of them are important, all relevant. And we started off last night with the high-flying Dockers. Who would have thunk it? Two games clear on top of the AFL ladder after only six rounds. It's hard to see the powerhouse Purple having their top two spot usurped. But let's have a review and a chat about how they did it over the Bombers.
Inside Football, Fremantle. Essendon.
Neil on the wing to Harford. Clark up, he's okay.
Fingers
Marks
all right.
Gets it down. Daniel Pearce, outside 50. Pavlik shooting his eyes. Ball comes.
Fell over.
Teammate, opposition player falls over Hurley. Pavlik kept his feet. Pavlik kicks the goal and the game has been broken apart.
We're quick and strong in our tackling. I was really thrilled with the first three quarters. And, you know, last quarter, there's just some reminders if you back off or you fall down in certain areas that, you know, you come under some pressure. So that was okay. But off a short break, travel, strong opposition that had been put under pressure.
That was Ross Lyon talking about that last quarter. We'll speak to a man who had an intimate relationship with both the Bombers and the Dockers throughout his illustrious career, Robert Shaw, in a moment. But last night, Fremantle, 12-8-8-I, defeated Essendon, 7-10-52, 37,535 at Subiaco Oval. I don't for a minute suggest that Fremantle were anything but the deserved winners of this game. Most people tipped them. Most people were able to, if they wanted to get an early night's sleep, go to bed at three-quarter time, comfortable in the knowledge that even the relaxed Dockers would take the 4 points. But I just say this. When you're over in Perth and you're playing one of their teams in form, and this year it's Fremantle and it will be for a while, a big thing of the game is to keep the opposition a leash on them and keep yourself in the game as long as possible so the crowd doesn't start to become a torrent of support, a 19th man on the field, if you will. And it was a very tight opening. Essendon were good value in the first 15, 20 minutes. And to me, the game wasn't broken up by Fremantle. The game was broken up by two pitiful umpiring decisions. There was an intentional out of bounds against Mark Bagley that defies description. He has a player hot on his hammer. He doesn't take possession of the ball. We see what he did 10 times a quarter. No, well, not, maybe not that often, but certainly 10 times around. Not even consider it to be a free kick, but with the vociferous hometown support, a free kick was given. And then a ball was centred to Zach Clark. Three players went for that mark. All three had their eyes on the ball. To pick out a player for a free kick seemed to me to be nothing more, nothing less than, once again, riding to the tide that was the hometown fervour. I know they were going to win the game in the end, probably. But to open it up that way after Essendon conscientiously went pretty much goal for goal, kick for kick, contest for contest for 20 minutes seems unfair to the visiting side. Over to you now, Shorey.
Comment by Mark. Mark Fine, look, they were obvious, but let's look at the game, how it did pan out. And you're right, Mark, they came with a very good plan, Essendon, to really try and smother the stoppages, negate the dominance of Sandilands, get numbers around there. And that involved, obviously, Watson, Goddard and Heppel. The Heppel Fife duel, that was just fantastic. No, the big bloke, the bigger bloke got on top.
Which one is the big bloke? They stood next to each
other. Well, they did. Remember that footage? And yeah, which one's the big bloke? Yeah. So that was a good matchup. Melksham had Hill on the wing. And look, it's really interesting when I watch Ross Lyon coach against his old players, Mark, and you might cut in here. Look, I'll go back a bit. Both sides have gone, for a couple of reasons, without their number one grunt inside tagger. Crowley, well documented, and Hocking injured. There's no doubt that as diligent as he has been over his career, that Fremantle have moved on from Crowley with the emergence of who was generally the sub, young Neil last year, becoming one of the best inside mids. And then with his run, and also on the other hand, I think Essendon are really missing the grunt diligence and toughness of Hocking. So there's two sides to those tagging roles in the middle. Sandilands was fantastic. And when you watched it backwards, the game, you know, you talk about Mundy and you talk about a Fife. This bloke isn't getting under the radar because we know he's got... His combination with Lachie Neale is fantastic. And even he hits the wide one to Fife running, but a lot of his work is in close to Neale. Drops it down in front and away he goes. That's where I want to get back to. It's interesting, Goddard's had 35. Look, because of the pressure and because of Fremantle, I didn't think many of them were hurting the opposition. It's interesting, as I said, when Ross coaches against his old players, he never lets Nick Del Santo off the hook, Finey. So it's interesting how he reads his former players that really played for him. But he just let Goddard go. That's very interesting how he reads that. Basically, Fremantle now go head-to-head, and why shouldn't they? They've got the bloke that gets under the radar, the other Pierce. I think there were three. How many Pierces were there?
Three.
There were Alex from Tasmania.
He looked good.
Mate, there's the future.
Yeah, he looked good.
And he's tall. Daniel is under the radar because one of the stats was he's a leading inside 50 player. Clancy has got himself very, very fit and doing a number of jobs. So that's how we had it. And, yeah, they were influential. But as you said, Mark, it was 54 points at three-quarter time. Essendon had three goals to three-quarter time. And even though the criticism all week has been on Essendon's ball movement and through particularly trying to get through the middle, they go wide, they use it short, a lot of teams, I'll hold fire on that at the moment because a lot of teams really struggle with Fremantle's pressure and Essendon did. It was magnificent to watch. And this team is now two games and percentage on top, Mark, and who would deny them the opportunity now to have the first final and to go into a Premier League final this far out? They certainly found a player in Alex Pierce. We've discussed him. The two young blokes, Danaher and Pierce, went head-to-head in a very, very good duel. And the loss of McFarland, now with this young kid backing up or playing, debuting, is great for the Fremantle team. Essendon, they were fantastic in the first 20 minutes, but this team grinds you down, works you hard. And then we get to three-quarter time, Mark, and I want to cover two games here because it's happened too many times to be a fluke. Fremantle kicked 1 point in the last quarter, and the Sydney Swans kicked one goal. There's no doubt with the course of the game and 54 points up, the Melbourne situation with Sydney, that experienced coaches with experienced teams are doing man management as we go. Nothing against Essendon's fight back. Melbourne fought back. Essendon kicked the last four goals of the game. At least they played the game out. Fife went to full forward, right? Pavlich went on the ball for a run on the ball. Main went to centre half back, right? So they put Pierce back to half back. They put Mundy out to a wing. He moved wider. And it just the type of moves, Mark, you would make when you're behind in a big game and you have to try. So there's no doubt, with the greatest respect for Hurd and Essendon, what they were trying to do, this is a team, both Sydney and Fremantle, that are in management mode. They got the job done. They were emphatic in the way they got the job done. And I've got no doubt, having watched them time and time again do this, they just go into a bit of a holding pattern.
In the last, we'll take the first game of the season out of it because the game against Port Adelaide was fought out to the very end.
Yes.
So the last quarter was desperation stakes.
Yep.
This is really interesting. In the five games since then,
yep.
In the last quarter, Fremantle have scored 11 goals, 15.
That's two a game.
As per their opposition, having scored 13 goals, 8.
Right.
There's only one problem with that. Against Melbourne, Freo in the last quarter kicked 7-2 to 0-6. So take the Melbourne game out of it.
Right.
0-2 to 4-4 last night. These are in games where they were well ahead. 2-4, or in relative control. But the Sydney game, less so, but 2-4 to 3-4. In the game against, now not against Geelong, I think it was the round 3 game, and I'll just bring that one up just a moment. In the round 3 game, Fremantle were playing West Coast. In the last quarter, Freo kicked 1-2 to 6-2 by West Coast, and 1 apiece in the game before that. There is no, and these were the games where they were, three of those games where they were able to take the foot off the pedal. So they're on top of the ladder. They've still got a good percentage, but they're not even being forced to play games out. And with, as you pointed out, Pavlich and Sanderlands, McFarlane not playing this week, of course.
And that was the other one. Sanderlands, I'm glad you mentioned it. Spent an unbelievable amount of time at full forward to give Zach Clark the hit out in the ruck and double-team Bell Chambers.
And they're also preserving their older players, their stars. Isn't Pavlich playing well? They're preserving their seasons rather than, and it's an interesting notion, isn't it? Rather than giving Pavlich and Sanderlands a game off every 6 or 7, which they may well do anyhow. Maybe their sports science tells them it's not about the week off. It's about running through, going, you know, over the red zone, going, making their players, their more experienced players, keeping on driving hard when the light comes on to say that your tank's almost empty. So it's clearly being done. And they can afford to do it because of how brilliant they've been this season and how, in many games, they've already been up by an unbeatable and unassailable margin at three-quarter time. We had a look at their draw. See, when a team is 6-0 and two games clear of the next, thoughts immediately, I guess, turn to, they've had an easy draw, have they? But they haven't. In fact, Ross Lyon said the first four games of the season would be decisive in whether or not they would be able to make the top four. This could be above, must be above everybody's expectations to be 6-0 and doing it with seemingly a leg in the air. Could anybody have picked any team, Hawthorn, Freo, Port, Sydney being the obvious choices, to be so far ahead of the pack after 6 rounds?
Well, not in this competition, Mark.
No, and, you couldn't have imagined.
And while we say that they, and that's another reason why it makes sense that they take the foot off the pedal, because of the draw that they've had, right? The Derby, West Coast Eagles, I don't think will feature too much. They'll be okay. But that's always a huge game. The Port Adelaide game was played at breakneck speed. They had Sydney, didn't they? They've had Essendon. So, yeah, they haven't had an easy start. So they've taken the opportunity to lighten the load in games. You know, they've gone hard because they picked... They could have easily rested Walters and Pavlich, but they chose not to. They passed their fitness test. They passed their concussion test. So they put them out there. And they make statements very, very quickly in games, Fremantle.
How about a couple of Essendon players? Key players for the Bombers that are struggling at the moment. In our preview leading into this game, you and I spoke about David Zaharakis. So I kept an eye out for him last night. My screen wasn't wide enough because I just didn't see very much of David Zaharakis.
No, it's disappointing, his form and his run and his ability to go into the midfield and take pressure. Like you know, Goddard, Heppel, Watson, gee, they did work hard. But what you need there is you need that talent to be spread. I've spoken about Hocking, how Essendon badly need a tagger to absorb like a Fife, or try to go to Mundy or something like that, which just spreads Essendon's midfield talent. At the moment, they're really missing him, which basically means that Watson and Heppel, Goddard, spending a long time on the ball. I know they try and throw Watson forward sometimes, but that's a move you base yourself on initiative when you've got the initiative. When they haven't got the initiative, they need those three boys around the ball, and they're going to fatigue because Fremantle are throwing different players at you constantly.
Big Joe Danaher, 10 goals in 6 games, and in the last 2 weeks, only the single goal. Does he need? Do they need to try and find a different... less of the time spent at full forward for him, because it seems as though that's where he's being frozen out. When he's farther afield, when he's where the ball is, he looks good. Obviously, yes. It's hard to get the ball where it ain't, but terms of just kicking it up to him and hoping for the big mark or expecting him to, you know, on the lead, grab a few, like a traditional full forward. I don't think that's happening very much.
He is the number one target, which concerns me. Ambrose's role is a hit-up centre-half forward. He probably hit up too far on the weekend and allowed Michael Johnson to zone off and be a very important player the way he does it. Carlisle's the key to this, Mark. I know we've been on his case for some time. Joe, if you've got Ambrose pushing up, Carlisle's got to play inside 50 and lead and be the primary target. At the moment, he doesn't move around enough. He's not smart with his movement patterns and doesn't run enough.
They kicked one goal between them. Danaher won, yeah. Carlisle didn't get a goal.
Yeah, but you're talking about how you set up a team.
Yep.
The best way to set up that team is for Joe Danaher to be the third target. At the moment, he's and good on him. You know, you're judging him in goals. I think his work rate is much better than Carlos. He does present. He does run back. He does cut angles. You saw him, they followed him on the screen there at one stage where he made a lead. He missed the goal, but that movement pattern was really good. They need to get more out of Carlisle, which will take the pressure off Danaher and make him the third tall. At the moment, because of his work rate, and I think he's going well on that, very young man who works very hard, but he doesn't get the support from Carlisle that he needs. And once again, I know it was desperation move, but Hurley beaten by Pavlich, he went forward and Carlisle went back. Still think that the type of player that Hurley is, that leads hard and draws the ball and attacks the ball, is the better combination if you're talking about the development of Joe Danaher, because it just takes so much pressure on, because the way Hurley works, that's not going to happen because of the year that he's had, even though he had a bad one yesterday against the old fella at full forward.
We're going to take a break. When we return, Clarko was unapologetic as regards Hawthorn's unsociable football last week against North Melbourne. Well, he might have been unapologetic during the week, but I reckon as of last night, he would have been wholly and solely unimpressed at not having at his behest two of his strongest midfielders, because a brilliant young GWS...
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merholm, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. GWS Giants.
Up back inside 450. Here we go. Whitfield across. Devin Smith. Right boot. You better believe it. Have a listen to them. They are inspired. The GWS Giants, and Devin Smith has kicked his third.
Internally, we knew we had to fix a few things because of our effort last week against the Eagles. But for the guys to respond in the 22, though, I mean, you know, they obviously played a fantastic brand of footy against a terrific side, and to get the result in front of, you know, nearly close to 14,000 people chanting and making a lot of noise is just great for the footy club. And, you know, it's our second biggest crowd outside when we played the Swans in the Derby last year in round one. So it's just good to see that not only is our footy team starting to progress, and we know we've got a long way to go, the supporters and the club in general is starting to progress as well.
That was a very pleased Leon Cameron. And he's spot on, by the way. Watching that game, it sounded as though there's a bit of a cauldron being created there. That's their first game at Spotless, and that needs to be addressed, of course, by the powers that be, given that it is now round six, and for various reasons they couldn't get on Spotless in their home, right in, obviously, the midst of their hometown support in the west of Sydney. Of course, a couple of games have been played in Canberra. Does set back their membership drive, I imagine, but more important than membership, I think, for GWS at the moment is simply interest, newspaper column inches, and just general buzz. And there would have been a bit of a buzz before the game. Even though they got thrashed by West Coast, 13,500 turned up, and that is a very good result for a side that hadn't played at home this season, or at least at their first chosen home ground. And what followed next was something that should mean that crowd of 13,500 will but be built on, because they were fantastic. They sniffed something. It was an odd game because each quarter seemed to start with Hawthorn getting out of the blocks, and you think, right, okay, they're going to get torn apart. 3-0, bad luck GWS. No, they clawed their way back a bit. Then again, Hawthorn get a couple of goals early. Ah, this is it. This is where they get blown apart. No, halftime, it's, in fact, GWS a nose in front. Ah, now Hawthorn are playing properly. First 3 goals of the third quarter. No, back they came again. And then in the last quarter, it was, and there might have been an early goal by Hawthorn, but they were pulverisingly, they sniffed something there in that last quarter, Shorey. They got to level at 90 points apiece. Now, I should, of course, give you the correct football score, but you don't get that on the screens anymore. So what's 90 normally? That would be 13-12, 90 apiece. Was it 13-12? Yeah, probably was. 13-12, 90 apiece. And then this young team with their hands around the throat of the premiers, just about to grasp the holy grail, the win against Hawthorn, started to get a bit yippy. Behind. 5 behinds in a row. But I guess they never would have got too nervous, because Hawthorn couldn't get the ball any further away than 70 metres from the GWS goal. And in the end, they were able to find that goal and then find, I think Hawthorn might have even kicked a late goal. They found breathing space on the back of a midfield that had become dominant with Sheil, and a very good performance, I thought, in the crushes by a couple of occasions, Scully. Now, I know he gets the rounds of the kitchen, but just a hand in here and a body placed there was excellent. Treloar's always good at the tough, in these tough moments, but as much as I'd love to say it was all the kids, it wasn't. It was Callan Ward, it was Shane Mumford, and at last, because I was just about to put a line through him, a very good last quarter by Ryan Griffin, and that was all she wrote.
Well, there was 8 midfielders, Mark. Ward, Treloar, Sheil, Whitfield, Coniglio, Griffin, Green, Scully, led by Mumford. It's a very, as you said, it's a very well-balanced midfield. You've got the youth, you've got the experience, and you're quite right.
Ward was so good. Oh, was he good.
Griffin stood up for them. Scully played his best game, wonderfully led by Mumford. He was fantastic. Devon Smith chips in with his three goals. He's a very, very smart player. And the thing that I noticed is when they, you know, Clarkson's, oh, by the way, the plane trip home. Right? She was like Clarkson and Fagan, right? They were in 4B and C. Then there was a gap. She was an empty plane, Mark, because all the players were up. No one would be glancing. I don't know where Hodgie and Lewis were, but they would have been up in 47C. So keep them well away because, some of the people, strategic selections and all this sort of stuff. Oh, you've only got GWS and Melbourne coming up. Well, that's one down, folks. And you won't get that one back. And lack of discipline has cost this team the goal. Injuries also are significant with Frawley and Lakeout. We saw Cameron, what he did to Schoenmakers, and which meant that Gibson had to go across onto him, which they didn't want. And one interesting thing, if you watch that, you watch Hawthorn's kickouts in the last quarter. There was a lot of nerves. There was intercepts. There was missed kicks. They zoned and pressed, manned up. They did the whole lot, GWS, very well. And they made this team, without the stabilisers, very, very edgy.
Did they put Suckling and Whitecross in the headlights a couple of times?
Well, certainly, well, they were deep there. Yeah, they did. And that was very, very interesting because when you get these players out, everyone says, oh, other players have got to stand up. Well, great teams have people that play particular roles, but when they are thrust into a different environment or a different set of circumstances, you find out a lot about them. And no doubt the courage that Hodge and Lewis give that team is fantastic. And this was...
Off the SMS, a good point. Spanger is sorely missed. Spanger is sorely missed.
Yes, 3 weeks. Another 2 weeks, I think, Cam.
Yeah.
Will Howe get back in?
He's injured.
He's injured.
There's real long-term concerns. His back is a problem.
Well, Cam, he's not a fool. Line through Griffin. Griffin came there on big money. He's a captain. He is a senior player. And he has been MIA until now. And that's a fact, mate.
They talked about it during the week.
But Cam's called you a fool. He's been very, very ordinary, and he's been carried by some of these players. That's the first time, in my opinion, that he has stood up and said, I'm going to carry this team over the line. And that's his job.
But do you know
he's
what
not a bit player.
You know what happened during the week?
So I apologise, Cam.
Do you know what happened during the week, Ryan? Griffin, who had been mollycoddled a bit for the first 5 weeks of the AFL season by... through the press conferences and through the midweek doorstops, they were building up a case for him. Leon Cameron, various assistant coaches were trying to create a case for him, basically to keep his confidence up. And Ryan Griffin is a quiet chap. They have obviously, after 5 weeks, felt that they didn't really have the key to unlock the best Ryan Griffin. And they were playing the old, oh, yeah, he's doing team roles and things off the ball. Very important, very important. Just to keep...
That spin, yeah.
Just to keep Ryan's...
confident.
Keep him positive. I think they had enough of it because this week, the challenge was absolutely laid at his feet. It was laid bare. And Leon Cameron spoke about it. And the word out from the club, and I heard it a couple of times this week, is it is time for Ryan Griffin to step up and show... for GWS, the sort of form that made us willing to trade a top prospect for him. And I guess that's the way you get something out of Ryan, is to prod him, not to take it easy with him. You need to up the ante, because he was very good in that last half.
Finally, Cam's on fire here, and he raises a good point. He's bounced back. How good is Mumford? Swan should never get rid of him. Swan's had no option but to get rid of him when they signed Lance Franklin to a... 9-year, $10 million deal.
There's got to be a price to pay.
And that's the old economics opportunity cost. Yeah, you can have Franklin, but it will cost you these draft picks. It'll cost you Mumford's money, and Mumford will just get in a taxi and swap clubs in town. So, yeah, that's that's how you judge that one. The opportunity cost of Lance Franklin coming to your team got them to a grand final, didn't get them to a premiership, and that's the way it goes. So they really had no choice, and the big fella took the money at GWS, and it's been fantastic for them. Mark,
are there concerns for Hawthorn?
No, there were concerns. Remember, they had the horrific injuries last year, and they found that. Oh, I've got no doubt they will find their way through this. Suspensions, injuries of cost and balance, and the and where they want to play their players. There's no doubt on yesterday's showing is exposed some players that usually would be provided with some nice physical coverage, and they were shown out. So the other blokes just kept coming. And two of the unsung heroes, you know, we've spoken at length about Mumford and his gang of midfielders. Nick Haynes and Joel Patfull, they were sensational.
Patfull was really good.
And some of the boys.
Patfull was good.
Was it Bunteen or was it Haynes?
And Nick Haynes did something
Who
really
kept running
stupid.
Back with the flight of the ball, going third man up and spoiling? I reckon they did it four times.
Nick Haynes did something that would have absolutely infuriated Leon Cameron. That I think it might have been in the end of the second quarter, or was it in the third quarter? Probably in the third quarter. GWS had just been able to hit the front, and it looked like GWS might be able from that point on to go on with it. And there was an innocuous mark taken 55 metres out, and Nick Haynes just pushed the guy in the back for no reason. 50-metre penalty, goal. From the resultant bounce, Hawthorn, goal again, and Hawthorn had turned what looked to be an under-siege moment into a two-goal break.
Yeah.
And Nick Haynes had to wear that, and he wore it with great courage in the last quarter because he was the man that went back with the flight on a couple of occasions. He owed the team, and he paid the team back in the same game. That was a fantastic effort by Nick Haynes. You see, when you have a look at Brisbane and their lack of defensive experience, nous, and capability, you realise why Joel Patfull kept winning. He won two BNFs there, did he?
I reckon he did.
And you just say, Patfull won the BNF? How did that? I'll tell you how it bloody happened. Because he does what coaches want most out of their players, and that is sacrifice himself and put his body on the line for the better of the team. And their loss, very good pickup by GWS. You have a look at two different pickups. Now, at the start of the season, if you would have said who's going to be doing, who made out like thieves, GWS with Patfull or Gold Coast with Malcheski? I reckon most people would have said the premiership hero Malcheski, but it's one thing taking a great player out of a premiership team and putting him into a team of lesser standard. Another thing taking Joel Patfull out of any team and putting him anywhere. Give me Joel Patfull any day. Of course, I say that with hindsight, but she's a beautiful, beautiful thing. After the break, well done, GWS.
Yep. Hawks to bounce back.
Hawks to bounce back, not next week because you're still in strategic suspension mode. Come on, Demons, teach them another lesson. After the break, we'll have a look at Gold Coast and Adelaide and find out how how the gold was plundered again. Steamrolled, bulldozed, muscled, outplayed the Hawks, and we're going to talk about it on the other side of the break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. The Gold Coast Suns.
I never felt as though at any time we had total control of the game, and I thought if they would have probably kicked straight at the start of that third quarter, it could have been game on. So I credit to Gold Coast. I thought it was a good contest. Skills a little bit disappointing for both teams, but there was a bit of pressure out there, so we're happy to take the points and move on.
Our movement going forward, the first half was a bit stilted. But when we had a chance, we dropped three or four chest marks and kicked it poorly. I thought after half time we readdressed the way we wanted to play. And I thought, 2-5 in the third, four of them were set shots, they kicked 5-2, and we won the last quarter. So overall, I thought they didn't drop their heads, they stuck at it, they persevered pretty well.
Those positive words by Philip Walsh and by Rodney Ead were very true. The final score of 18-11-119 to 11-12-78, 12,400 Metricon. They were hidden compared to the 13,000 at Spotless, obviously because the home team were never really in the game. You don't hear their support as much. They were good in the second half, Gold Coast. They were desperate. There were players that I know very little about playing for them. I don't know a great deal about Glenn. I didn't see a great deal of Glenn. But he was out there. My pet project player, Henry Shard, or Shade, or Sharde, put himself about a bit. I mean, he's obviously, as a bigger player, he's going to be a longer-term project. But the players that really interested me for them were their on-ballers. And in the absence of Ablett, O'Meara, Bennell, Martin,
Stanley, McKenzie, Matera.
And various other late-night drinkers or early-morning malcontents. Well, you know, this is a side that, unfortunately, at the very same time that GWS are springing into bud and looking like a serious senior team, this is a side that has off-field problems to match their injury woes. So the last thing they needed was ill discipline. But it had afforded some opportunities. Now, Tuke Miller's only a slip of a lad, but and might not have been in the team. Probably wouldn't have been if Martin and Bennell.
No, he's been in, Mark.
He has been in, but I think he got dropped a week ago. He's just been hanging on. I've got a feeling had Bennell and Martin been playing, then Tuke Miller may not have. Well, you know what? When Bennell and Martin gets over his ankle injury, and I know he played a good game last week, but he has been generally disappointing, and Bennell has been morally bankrupt in, as a team leader, behaving the way he did over the weekend. Well, I hope it's not Tuke Miller that loses his spot.
No, it won't be.
But I'm saying, I certainly hope it's not, because whether it was him or more prominent names like Dion Prestia, who we know is a very good footballer, they were able to compete with. Now, I thought Adelaide had the powerhouse midfield to beat the band, of course, with Paddy Dangerfield and Sloan.
Well, good on Andrew Raines. Good on Andrew Raines.
Yep. So Andrew Raines did a job. Sloan came off. I don't think there's too many injury concerns there. He
went into the game a little bit of doubt. So
yeah, I mean, he got some head contact, but I think he's okay. But at halftime, when you're playing a beleaguered team with arguably 8 to 10 players out of their best 22, and a midfield that's supposed to rip things apart, and Jacobs well on top, or not well on top, but certainly. And I've got to give credit to Nichols, actually. He was very competitive. But Jacobs, nominally the best of, you know, one of the best three ruckmen in the comp. For Gold Coast to have played the way they did in that last half is full of merit, and their midfield should take, if not a bow, then certainly should take $5 out of petty cash for putting in a good shift.
No, there's no doubt about that. And the one you also missed was David Swallow. This is
And you see, Riscatelli wasn't the key. In previous weeks, it had fallen to Riscatelli to really do most of that midfield work. Well, I didn't note him as being the reason behind it. And Hallahan, they just went in pretty hard in that last half and gave a good contest.
Mark, they do have depth. You can see why they've been a good side. Look at the names out. And the boys that came in, you mentioned Hallahan, you mentioned Miller. Very experienced Andrew Raines. He knows how to run with someone and do a job, and he'll play for the team. The number of players out and then ability to expose and put a team on the field after 7 or 8 changes is a very good performance, and there's some truth in the suggestion it was their best performance because it was a character performance. And Adelaide, naturally, through Walker with 4 and Betts with 5, had the class to keep them at arm's length. But I reckon they got exactly what Rodney Ead was hoping for, a statement, and about, like, what was it, 9-7-8 in the last half. So they were more than competitive with the team that has a bigger profile, is supposed to be pressing for top six. You know, I'm not sure how Adelaide will see that game other than banking the 4 points and getting back home next week in a big game against... who have Adelaide got next week?
St Kilda.
They've got the Saints over there. They'd have to be very, very careful in that certain game. But it was a good effort. A good effort and something that Rodney Ead would be pleased about. There were skill errors. They would drop marks and all those sort of things. But he's thrown that team together at very, very short notice. Eight blokes is, what's that, you know, 45% of your team changes overnight because of, again, poor discipline. This needs to be fixed quickly.
Now, we know that we are taking extreme caution with the concussion assessment and when players can come back. And I've got a case in point from the Adelaide Football Club that says that this vigilance is absolutely required. Brodie Smith got KO'd against Collingwood at the start of the last quarter when he was best on ground. He had 29 possessions that day and was running amok. In the first game against North Melbourne, he had 22 touches and was equally as impressive. Now, he didn't miss a week. And he looks a light of those players, those games, the player that played those two games. 18 possessions against Melbourne, 20 against the Doggies, 16 against Port Adelaide, and yesterday 14 or 13 against the Gold Coast. But I was having a real close look at Brodie Smith this year, and I was incredibly impressed with what I'd seen up till three-quarter time against Collingwood. And I'm not as sure, I'm not certain that he hasn't taken some ill effect. And the fact that he didn't take a week off now seems to be a question marked response to what was a enormous blow. I think it was accidental, but he hit somebody's knee. He was tackled and thrown into an opponent's knee and went off, and there was concerns for his swallowing his tongue. I mean, it was probably as bad a concussion as we've had for the season, and he's come back nowhere near the player that got concussed that day. So I'm very interested to know what the internal assessment was of Smith and exactly how Brodie feels about his footy at the moment. Yeah, we need to take a break.
And just very 8 seconds, Mark. Why is Tom Rockliffe playing? Well, if in fact he does play.
Oh, he could. Yeah, we'll see.
Didn't the bloke get 3 weeks for knocking him out and giving him concussion?
We'll see how he comes back.
See if he plays.
I doubt he will. I'm no doctor, but if he does, I hope he's right. A break. When we come back, I'll tell you what's coming up after 11.
On 11:16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Welcome back to Inside Football. Still three games to look at, including that incredible comeback by the Saints over the Doggies, North Melbourne's handling of Richmond down in Tasmania, and the last game we will be looking at. I'm trying to remember. I don't even have it in me to remember what six games were on a Saturday. But there was another one, wasn't there? Come on, finally. Final game, Melbourne-Sydney, of course, at the MCG, which was not a terribly exciting game of football to watch, let's be fair. But before we get stuck into those three games, as we do every Sunday morning, John Ralph of SEN and the Herald Sun, where I think he's pretty close to leading the tipping. Are you on top of the tipping at the Herald Sun, Ralphie?
It is a miracle. I think I've abandoned my team, who I wish you'd forgotten that game from yesterday. But, yeah, somehow I'm on top. Every dog has his day, hey?
Except yesterday, where the dogs did not have their day.
Hey, they didn't too.
One dog in particular. Gee, terrible, terrible news for young Clay Smith. What a sad... And we had on Friday night, of course, Josh Cowan come off, and almost thankfully it was a hamstring, even though that is bad luck for a kid out for so long. But for Clay Smith, it's no hamstring.
No, it's no hamstring. It's the ACL, and it's a very long road back for a bloke who's already had two issues and two reconstructions with his right knee. Now people will, I don't know, want to say, why did he come back on? We know that he had some issues with that knee, and 15 minutes later, the knee buckled. But you know, these are decisions that are made by club doctors who are the very best in their game. And so, look, maybe, you know, in the ideal world, you have a scan, you don't play out that game, and then, of course, the knee that buckles that didn't happen, but that's not real life, and that's not football. So I'm sure that that Jake Landsberger and the doctors there would have done all of their work and made sure that there was no injury initially, and then of course sometimes you just get really bad luck. So he'll be done for the year, and it's even more heartbreaking to see the likes of Alex Woodward and also Daniel Menzel tweeting about him and comfort for him. They know how far back it is, and they know what a tough 12 months in rehab he faces.
Isaac Heaney looked inconsolable when he came off with a knee injury against the Demons. It's not the dreaded ACL, but the PCL is certainly going to mean a period on the sidelines.
Well, yeah, so often we've seen that PCL gets pushed back in ruck situations. But, yeah, it just sort of almost seemed to buckle underneath him or flex underneath him as he fell after a marked collision with Brayshaw. But, yeah, only a 4 to 6 weeker. We say only, but certainly it means he gets back when the whips are cracking, and we think that Sydney will be there when those whips do crack. So, yeah, certainly dodged the bullet, and he'll be pretty happy this morning, as upset as he was last night.
Rory Sloane got a knock to the cheek, and I guess they'll have to take some x-rays there.
So, well, yeah, look, the experts say that, look, if that is knocked out of place, if it's displaced, that you do have to have surgery, and plates can be put in and screws, and that can be a 6 to 8 weeker. But there have been players, notably Matthew Richardson, who have played with it, if it's just a pain management thing. And so certainly the scans today or tomorrow will ascertain whether he's out for potentially a couple of months or whether he just plays through the pain. So obviously Adelaide is in that middle pack who desperately need their match winners to get back out or to stay on the park for them.
He might wear one of those face masks that we see in international soccer. Like, I think Fabregas might be wearing one at the moment, and players that wear them get nicknamed Spider-Man because they look like they're sort of masked up like the Spider-Man character. Or I don't know whether we've seen one in AFL football, have we?
Well, no, I don't think we have. We saw one of the NBA stars, I think, last week was playing. Not Memphis, but, yeah, he had a very similar injury. Yeah, cheekbones and 3 or 4 plates put in. But, you know, those blokes are getting maybe at worst an elbow, whereas, you know, full force, full frontal collision in the AFL. I like it, if only for the nickname. I don't know about the practicality in the AFL, though.
Ben Griffiths went off with concussion, and I saw Ty Vickery kick 3 in the VFL and Liam McBean kick 5. So not only would they not possibly risk Ben Griffiths, but they might even debut McBean because Richmond needs something.
I need to change the forward makeup. Look, McBean was tried in the NAB Cup last year, and there'd been so much hype about him, and he's a kind of player who takes the ball on the lead but also can win it on the ground, and he just looked like a little twig, and he just looked like he just needed more football. So it's going to be a big decision for Richmond. Their coach has already said that their forward line is dysfunctional, and you guys will analyse that in the next hour. But they need to change the makeup somehow, don't they? You know, a side that doesn't really have a small defender, it doesn't really have a small forward, it doesn't have a foil for Jack Riewoldt. Gee, they've got some issues. And so it'll be fascinating to see whether they maybe play both of those players, because Riewoldt's not getting a heck of a lot of one-on-one ball, but that's only just the start of an endless list of problems.
I've just been told off the SMS that Rory Sloane's nickname's already Batman. So if they added Spider-Man to the mix, he could end up being called Superhero.
And I love it. I like it. A bit of Marvel action.
Yeah, he's got the tricks to be a superhero, so that might be something that we keep an eye on. I wouldn't be surprised if that was employed. Chris Newman. Now, I'll tell you what. We know that this is Chris's last season. Maybe the end will not be of his choosing. A groin injury, and that's not... Obviously, he had the heart problem at the prior to the start of the season. So I guess the end and Chris Newman and their meeting is coming together pretty quickly.
Yeah, look, you have to be so devoted and so intense as a flanker these days. Newman really uses the ball well and played forward and back in the last year or so, but he certainly did have ice on that groin and seemed pretty Saw seemed to be wincing late in that game. So you would think that he would miss a couple of weeks. I think he actually didn't even miss a week with that hut. I think he got back for round one, didn't he? Which was
an amazing
comeback, yeah. But you would think at this stage that scans would show that he might need a couple of weeks on the sidelines himself.
And Luke McFarlane, who didn't play against Essendon, by the way, Alex Pearce was impressive on debut, will be player managed, and I'm sure they'll take no risks.
No, look, I think he'd be unlikely to play next week. Now, his coach wouldn't commit to that. Said, look, I just don't know at this stage. But he said that they tried to warm him up slowly. They knew that he was a bit sore in the calf, and he just didn't come to heel. And he said that Luke said, look, no, I'm out. So a really smart decision there, given his issues in the past. Look, you know, I think I might be made to look foolish to say that Fremantle couldn't win the flag in the pre-season, but this is why it's a marathon, not a sprint, because they need their best players up and running, they need their best taggers, and at the moment they're just playing such great football without Crowley. But, you know, let's see what's happening in September, because he just hasn't been able to get to the line in September in any type of form and fitness, Luke McFarlane, and again, those issues are raising their ugly head.
Couple of reports. First of all, the bump by Bagley on Barlow. Gee, I think there's extenuating circumstances there. I'm not sure whether that will actually make its way. If the match review panel takes it on, I don't know whether it would get through the tribunal. I think Mark Bagley might have a case here.
No, I agree. Look, I think he probably hit him flush in the chest. Look, if you wanted to slow it down, and we've only seen one angle so far, you might be able to make a case that his shoulder just clipped Barlow's chin. But I reckon he just hit him down the centre, and yes, he went back with the flight. Look, I think he's a big chance for the match review panel to throw that one out.
Further update on the status of Luke Parker's nickname. Now, Luke Parker is Batman. So we've got Luke Parker as Batman, Rory Sloan. No, Luke Parker's Spider-Man already. Rory Sloan is Batman. So we've got enough superheroes to go around in the AFL. Please, I'm sure there's a couple of supermen at certain clubs as well. I just hope there's no Wonder Women.
You just took the words out of my mouth.
And how about football's new boo boy? Isn't it funny how Bernie Vince has gone from being sort of a blonde-haired beauty to an arc? Well, if we're talking about superheroes, here's your archetypal anti-hero or bad guy or villain. Maybe he's a super villain.
Well, he would have been the kind of bloke too who would have really harangued that tag on the opposition team, wouldn't he? Look at you, mate. Any chance you might get a kick of your own? And now, of course, he's running around with other players. Look, he slid into, it was Tom Mitchell. Now, it wasn't that catastrophic, really strong force, the Stephen May type, but certainly Mitchell had his head right over the ball. It was that copybook action that the AFL doesn't like. So you'd think that the force is low. And so if he does get a suspension, it would likely be on the lower end of the table with rough conduct rather than May with the 2 weeks, which is up to three. But, yeah, he'd be nervous this morning. There's no doubt about that.
Ralphie, it's for, I guess, not a jam-packed injury report this week, but for a couple of players, first Josh Cowan and especially Clay Smith, terrible luck for guys that have just spent so much time on the sidelines. Hopefully we have less of that and more clean sheets as the season goes on. We'll listen out for Herald Sun's number one footy tipster during the week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Talk soon.
Good stuff. John Ralph there, SEN and Herald Sun. Odds, crown bet odds, may I say, for today's game. Carlton $1.28, Brisbane $3.75, the line is 25.5, and Port Adelaide $1.23, West Coast $4.20, a similar line of 27.5. A break, and when we come back at half time, most people had penned this in as a doggies win and percentage booster, and many had gone to the football fixture to see exactly how the 5-1 doggies could be kept out of the 8, and some even speculating, given that their draw looked pretty good, top four. Well, the doggies are still a great prospect for the future, but didn't things change in the second half? And we'll find out how after this break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football, the Western Bulldogs. St Kilda.
It's an enormous lift in our physicality and our care for our teammates at halftime. That was almost the message. We changed a few things. Rui went up into the wing. We changed what we were doing. We're probably trying to be a bit too cute with our handball at stoppage, so we just surged it forward and we kept some, you know, better structure in front of the footy. But it was really blokes digging in and being much more physical and much more aggressive.
The agony and the ecstasy, really. I mean, we had a good first half, and then it was probably the polar opposite in the second half, and couldn't keep the ball in our forward line and got beaten at the source, and both from a pressure point of view, but we gave the ball up a bit too easy, and that was due to St Kilda's pressure and their ability to rebound, and we just didn't counter it well at all. So credit to them.
The two coaches, two halves, two teams that, when the dust settles on this one, should both be supported by fans, pretty excited for the future one way or the other. The overriding message from this game, for me, wasn't the comeback, wasn't the final score, wasn't Bulldogs' pulverising brilliance in the second quarter. It was that clubs can quickly be re-energised with young footballers. And for all the long faces at Carlton this year and for the sense of doom and gloom at Tigerland and
Brisbane,
It does not take all that long because these young players are so physically adept at adjusting to AFL football. And there are so many of them in each side that to bring in new faces, new attitudes, and most importantly, not footballers who have been conditioned maybe to expecting the worst. So clubs like the Saints and the Doggies, whose history is often thrown up in their face as being the reason why ultimately things will always go pear-shaped, that doesn't mean a whole lot to... May it be for the Doggies, Bontempelli or McRae or Stringer or Johannesson or Rovat or Wallace or Jong, and for St Kilda for various Jacks, that doesn't mean anything because they are very free-flowing, naturally talented footballers who have re-energised two football clubs quickly. St Kilda 14-10-94 defeated the Doggies 13-9-87. The sort of scoreline that is probably symptomatic of the modern game. That's about an average score. You can look at that in years to come and not know the tale of an extraordinary football game. 29,619 were there to see it. It was a game that the Saints, by half-time, well, at quarter-time, there was no inkling of what was about to come. As a supporter of St Kilda, I felt that I had been belted in the face with a blast of Arctic air, or, you know, those ads for those fishermen friends? Those. I could not believe what I'd seen in that second quarter. The Bulldogs were irresistible, ferocious at the tackle. So when St Kilda got the ball, there was split seconds to get rid of it and make decisions. Transition was almost impossible for St Kilda, who, on a number of occasions, deep in their own back line, had nowhere to go and were caught just headlighting. The kicking by the Bulldogs, the disposal was perfect. And at halftime, the Doggies were rampant. The first goal in the second half by the Bulldogs almost confirmed most people's worst thoughts, and that was, uh-oh, this is, if you're a St Kilda supporter, a disaster. Or for the Doggies, how good are we? And then things happened. Stevens, who was, he's a good player, Kobe Stevens, had got a free kick late in the second quarter. Shouldn't have been a free, but it doesn't matter. But he got it, backing back into a pack, and he copped an almighty knee in the hip, buttock, upper thigh area. Half time came, and as the commentators pointed out, that cooling down period would have been disastrous for him. The cork he had set and he shouldn't have come back on to the field. But a very unfortunate knee injury recurrence for Clay Smith meant he had to. Jake Stringer, who had been subbed previously the week earlier with a calf injury, was not moving as he was in the first half. All that said, St Kilda then started winning the contest. David Armitage, those 45 possessions, they were not Gary Ablett possessions. Many of those were at stoppages. They were clearance work. They were dynamic. They allowed Jack Stephen to run forward of the ball with his extreme pace, and it brought young players into the game. Unlikely things occurred. Tom Hickey was able to stop Robert Murphy, who on a kicking kicked the ball to himself and thought it probably a fait accompli that he would waltz past the ruckman on the mark, Tom Hickey. Tom Hickey made a desperate lunge, caught him, stopped him, free kick, goal. Riewoldt, who'd been deep in the forward line, getting in the way of Josh Bruce and Vicky Verka, moved farther afield and started, if not having influence, then at least being a player to whom the St Kilda defenders could kick the ball to. They didn't do it all that often, but at least he drew a crowd. Geary started getting into the game and things started turning. Not slowly, but quickly. Goals came and then the big change was the three-quarter time siren, because it was like a heavyweight boxer on the ropes, down and out for the count, being saved by the bell. And the Doggies came out and kicked the first two goals of the last quarter.
Yeah.
A poor piece of defending off a shot at goal by, I think it might have been Tom Boyd, was marked by Ace Cordy, who played well and kicked a couple of, you know, I think he kicked a couple of goals, Ace, but at that point he was going well. In fact, for the rest of the game, he had a problem because his opponents became influential. But Cordy kicked a really nice goal. They kicked another. And the second comeback was better than the first. Don't worry about St Kilda getting from 55 to 12 behind. To be 12 points behind and then 25 points behind, well, that's normally enough to put a young team to bed for the afternoon. Enter Jack Billings.
There you go.
And now, Billings.
And
Billings. And Billings.
Three questions for you.
Who, by the way, just quickly, Billings, in that brilliant last quarter, had a shot at goal that he inexplicably didn't handball over the top to somebody in the goal square for a certain goal, I think Bruce, and then he had another snap from the top of the goal square that he fluffed. He had two moments that
he'd want back
and was so good in that last quarter that we forgive him.
All right, I've got three questions for you. I was at school, so I missed this game. And I'll invite the listeners to weigh in too if you want to comment on them. A general statement, you don't lose your ability or your fitness or anything in 20 minutes over a half time. So significant changes came over that game. The first thing I'll ask you is the attitude of Stringer to a champion in Nick Riewoldt. Was that out of line? I'm only reading about it. What was the build up to it? Did he get ahead of himself?
It was right after the Clay Smith incident.
Right.
That happened on half time. Okay. So they had to wait for the shot at goal. The Bulldogs had a shot at goal, which they kicked.
It resulted after in a melee, siren. Is that right?
But there was players standing around for 3 or 4 minutes, so you don't know what's set out on the field.
Okay.
So what normally would have been shot at goal off the ground was delayed for a couple of minutes for the unfortunate Clay Smith. So things might have been said in that period. It would have been easy to say, oh, Jake Stringer's gone up to Riewoldt and said, you're too old, mate, we're too good for you, up yours.
Well,
other things happen.
That would have been unnecessary.
Too simplistic.
The second part is, generally in that situation, Mark, a coach will throw everything up and see where the magnets land and say, well, let's just try something. Alan Richardson's coaching after three-quarter time, was there any move that you thought was significant that changed the game?
Absolutely.
Right.
Nick Riewoldt. See, Tom Hickey against Essendon played the Nick Riewoldt role.
Correct.
Of coming up high and being the outlet option for the long kick.
He did it well.
When Nick Riewoldt came into the team and took up that role, that put Hickey further back.
Hickey deeper.
Hickey then did it. They traded that duty in the first half, and a couple of times he and Bruce led to exactly the same spot. Now, the problem was when both of them on the same side of the ground, the result in that was, unfortunately, congestion, and St Kilda were their worst enemy in that first half. So, really good move by Alan Richardson at halftime was to get Riewoldt up onto the wing, almost out of that forward mix, but still offering the outlet kick. As I said, it wasn't used all that often. It's not like the Saints went to him often in the second half because they really tried to get down the centre of Eddie Had, but he always draws a crowd, Riewoldt. And when he led, there was an opponent, maybe a ruckman or another on-baller drawn into that side of the ground, and more importantly, the forward line looked clearer for St Kilda, who has some very smart small forwards. Yeah, Jack Loney. Jack Sinclair, and of Jack course, Billings. Bruce only kicked one goal. I thought his contribution in the second half was vital at the contest. Hickey was vital. I just want to mention one more player for St Kilda, who in the red-hot heat of the game as it got closer, did a couple of super things. You know, when you hear names read out at the draft, you just hope that they're good, and you hear at 53, Robert Shaw. Oh, well, Robert's a very good pickup. He's a combination of Roy Cazaly, Laurie Nash.
And Royce Hart.
You know, it's
yeah. yeah.
For St Kilda to have picked up Jack Loney, Jack Sinclair off the rookie draft was good enough news. And when Dan McKenzie was added to the team, not many people knew much about him. Gee, he did some good things, this boy McKenzie. He did some good things.
Now, and my last question, Mark, and I've read the paper because I panicked. I didn't see the game and what was the big story. Sometimes when you talk up Jack Billings, he was electric, he did this, he did that, he changed the game, he had 10 possessions, he kicked 3 goals in the last quarter, he kicked 4 in the second half. Can someone please tell me who was on him?
Well,
can someone tell me in the paper, in the media, who was his direct opponent technically responsible for the defensive side of the equation? Because I can't find it, and I'd love to know. And
well, at some point,
was it our man that we've been pumping up that our listeners have been given a bit of a touch up to, Mr. Johannesson? We've backed him because of his bravery, but he has got goals kicked on him.
There was Johannesson in the area. There was Robert Murphy in the area. See, Johannesson and Murphy...
In the area.
Johannesson and Murphy played back of the centre. And Johannesson with his run and Murphy with his precise ball usage have been brilliant this year.
Correct.
But somebody has to take up the slack.
Someone has to play on Jack Billings.
The midfield has to work back. But with Clay Smith off for the game and Stevens injured, I think that became very difficult for the Doggies to fold back. So... maybe a direct opponent, could be Johannesson, but more importantly, their midfield had become stretched and thin, and their ability to cover those two players attacking football in recent weeks by working so hard back had been severely impacted upon. So I would say no direct opponent. Previously,
Team coverage
was correct. Stretched too far.
Right.
Let's go to Neil in Albert Park, 9429 1116, if you want to do a Neil and call in. Hello, Neil.
Oh, how are you guys? Look, long time St Kilda supporter, but I was actually looking at the results from from Sandringham, and I'm not sort of getting carried away. No, it's only a win, but I think it's the first time probably in about 6 or 7 years where we've got about 8 or 9, maybe even up to 10 players that could step into the first team, and we've actually just finally started to get a little bit of depth, because there's a lot of players playing for Sandy that could walk straight into the side if someone was injured.
St Kilda this year spent their two first draft picks, their number one pick overall, on Paddy McCartan and Hugh Goddard. McCartan actually played up the ground for Sandringham, and he's a work in progress because his aerobic capacity isn't of AFL standard, which is why he was given a job further up the field, and he ran hard all day. Hugh Goddard looked good, but the players you're probably immediately thinking of that could step in. Blake Akers, very unlucky to be omitted, was close to best on ground. And Sam Gilbert, kicked the first or second goal of the game, showed that you can't replace, or you can't buy 5, 6, 8 years of experience, even if you're a very talented youngster. There is some depth there. There's also, I think, for the first time, not first time, but a growing sense of unity at St Kilda and Sandringham. I don't want to be too hard on the alignment. I don't know how long it has to run, but it seems a much happier place than it had been under Ross Lyon and Scott Waters. And that's, I'm not blaming those coaches. That's just how clubs set up sometimes with alignment. So it's a much better place than it had been previously and hopefully more productive. Let's go to Shane in Truganina. Good evening. Oh, good. That's me been doing my night work. Good morning, Shane.
Morning, Finey. How are you going?
Very well.
Yeah, well, I've been working all day yesterday and last night, so I missed the game. So congrats to St Kilda, but I'm a mad, passionate Doggies supporter. Just wanted to know, what are some of the positives us Doggies fans can take from the game? I know we had a blistering first half.
Plenty.
What can we take?
Plenty. A good point here. No Boyd in the back line. Matthew Boyd not being there again.
Rested for the second week in six is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's not right, but it can't be right.
Lin Jong was badly missed.
Badly missed. Wallace was badly missed.
Listen, Shane.
Liberatore was badly missed.
I just think, Shane, with a young team and playing such emotional, inspired football, going up to Sydney and then getting the publicity, the game has a funny, strange way of testing you. And I reckon you come in at 55 and oh, here we go again. This sort of thing happens all the time. We're away.
It's funny. I was thinking they would have been better off if they had one brilliant quarter in them.
It
would have been much better off that they were down by 20 points and up by 20.
Correct.
At halftime, you could not blame Bulldogs players for thinking, right, we're 50 points up. It's been a tough couple of weeks.
We're going to win again.
We can do a Freo. I think we might be able to have a
not
bit of
big-headed,
a...
Not big-headed, Shane. Not getting ahead of yourself, but just
but
maybe...
the good news.
A good news story, maybe a little bit of overconfidence and not being prepared to say, well, what got us in this position for the last 4 or 5 weeks? Are we prepared to do it again? Just a bit of inexperience, I think.
In terms of players, Shane, Michael Taylor is a good footballer. He's a good defender, Michael Taylor, and he has some ability with ball in hand. Now, he was not necessarily in favour with the previous coach. I'm not quite sure what the situation was there, but I know that at the end of the year, the Bulldogs might seek another key defender, given that Dale Morris, who was sorely missed as well, he's coming to the end of his career. I'm not putting a line through it, but you've got a need probably to find another big defender. There was a notion that at the start of the year, you didn't have many at all. Well, you got one there, and he lost no fans on the weekend or yesterday. And either to me did Ace Cordy. I don't know where Will Minson is in the coach's reckoning, but there was never, ever going to be a key position future for Ace Cordy at 6'8". And I think he's just going to be Cordy-like. He's never going to be a heavy set type like Mumford. The Cordys are bony. So it's ruck almost or bust. Well, at the moment it looks like no bust, but ruck. So that's really good news with Ace Cordy finally finding a spot in the starting 22 for the Doggies. It was a great game of football to watch. What might be lost in all of this for people who didn't see it, because the scoreline is all important, is what the commentators were saying yesterday in the heat of the game. And that was, these two teams in the next few years look like they may well, again, as they had done in 2009 and 2010, they may well be fighting it out at the top end of the table. Footy's fun again for the Saints and the Doggies. It was a bit more fun for the Saints yesterday, but after you serve your mum breakfast in bed, I think supporters of both clubs will be of the notion, future, bring it on. Break, bring it on. And thereafter, we head down to Tasmania. It was cold for the Tigers.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth, better. Inside Football, North Melbourne.
So join in the chorus and sing it one and all.
Richmond.
We're from Tigerland. A fighting fury, we're from Tigerland.
Twisting and turning, he's caught and he's been dumped. It's a free kick to North Melbourne, and Nahas will take the free kick. He's on a pretty cute angle, gives it straight away to Lindsay Thomas on the left side, around the body, and kicks a goal! Great play by the Kangaroos.
After some really disappointing lapses in concentration and some poor discipline late in the second quarter, we were able to respond and keep our emotions in check and take out any frustration we had on the scoreboard. And no one really demonstrated that better than Lindsay Thomas. He was the one who got us going after half time and after a disappointing second quarter.
That, of course, was the coach talking about North Melbourne's win over Richmond in Tasmania. It was 16-13-109 to 10-14-74 with 16,131 at Blundstone Arena. The game was up for grabs at halftime, and as you would imagine, with Richmond having had a disappointing start to the season already, and North Melbourne very keen to start to move up towards what they believe is within their grasp, a top four spot. This was an 8-point game. It meant a whole lot for these two sides, and it seemed as though we were in for a real tough battle right throughout the afternoon. It could have gone either way. And then what happened? He got busted open. Now, Brad Scott is talking about Lindsay Thomas. Before Lindsay Thomas came, Todd Goldstein, who once again gained control in the ruck and becomes almost, he and Mumford are the only two that do this, instantly after a centre bounce, part of the midfield. He becomes a contributing factor to the push forward with handball, with kick. Yesterday, it was very timely two pieces of play. A brilliant interception from a risky inboard play by the Tigers, by Goldstein, and then very strong follow-up play, both of which resulted in goals that started to break the game open. And the other play that broke the game open, maybe a little against type, I don't know if that's fair or not, but such is reputation in football. Sean Higgins took a very brave mark going back with the flight of the ball. He received a 50-metre penalty. I think it was against Rance that seemed harsh because Rance was committed to the contest and the head-high contact was deemed to be unnecessary. I would have thought it was probably unavoidable. Nevertheless, the courage won Higgins not only the mark but the certain goal. And the result was that Richmond would put at arm's length. And unfortunately this year, when Richmond fall behind, Richmond dropped their heads. And yeah, it happened again. Deledio, who'd been good, albeit off a four-week breakout of football, tired, and the slack wasn't taken up. Dustin Martin didn't take up the slack. Various other Richmond players started to fall into habits that are maybe considered typical of them when things aren't going well. Bashir Hooley gave away a poor free kick and a turnover. And all of a sudden, Richmond were playing like a Richmond and were gone. Well, A couple of goals in the last quarter were quickly replied to, and North Melbourne won well.
Mark, and to add to that, you said the game was on 15 minutes in the three-quarter time. I think there was 4 points of difference at the 11-minute mark. North Melbourne had 9 inside 50s, Mark, then, for 7-2. Every time they went in, they scored. Now, a couple of things stand out to me. Everyone will say, oh, their back line fell apart and all that sort of thing. You touched on it, on the work rate of their midfield and the capacity to get back and work hard and turn a back six into a back eight or nine, which they had no capacity to do because of work rate. The interesting thing for North was that...
Talk about work rate. How come Sean Edwards can work so hard?
Well, he's a much improved player.
And guys around him don't.
He's got the message. He's turned himself into a very good AFL midfield.
Does Damien Hardwick speak in tongues that only Sean Edwards understands?
Yeah. Anyway, that is an extraordinary stat. Score every time you go in, and the pressure that the Tigers put on their own back line, firstly through turnovers, missing targets, then the ball rebounds. It is hard to get back and have a team defence if you do turn the ball over, so I'll concede that. but certainly it wasn't all the back line's fault. And North, you know, they made an interesting move on the weekend. I reckon in most games that I've seen North, they've worked Harvey off the back of the square. They've made him part, not part of the back line, but an additional sort of defensive midfielder behind the stoppages coming forward. Actually pushed him forward a little bit more yesterday and joined the attacking foray. Got a couple of goals. He had a good, solid game, Boomer. That was a good attacking move there from Brad Scott. So, you know, the game's finished in 20 minutes. The game's finished after a more than competitive performance. Again, you know, two sides, as you said. North have been in the better form, but there's Richmond on the precipice of, you know, if you're down in Tassie, you're playing North, you're 4 points down, you're into the third quarter, game on. Game on. Not only concede the next nine inside 50, but 7-2 out of that is an extraordinary stat.
Now, it's of course Shane Edwards, not Sean Edwards. And that's the last time I looked down at my Herald Sun article for a player's name. No. You and I both got that wrong, Jake. That's all right. I should know it. I shouldn't have to look at an article down the page to see the name of a player. It is definitely Shane Edwards.
Unbelievable. Anthony and Sunshine, you know, right up to date with his stats. North Melbourne scored 92 points from direct Richmond turnovers. That is the difference, Shane. Is the difference.
I'll tell you what I dislike particularly are the ratings points that you get. I know that you despise them.
Those
fantasy football ratings points.
I do.
Ben Cunnington was rated, apart from Bastanek, who was the sub, as the second worst player for North Melbourne, with 39 of these...
Whatevers.
These conjured up poo points or whatever they are. He was really good yesterday, Ben Cunnington. Sometimes you need, you know, some... The fact that somebody has to get the contested ball and the hot ball out means that it's not going to hit players. You see, you get a point, if you're in the back line and you're playing ring-a-ring-a-rosy, Essendon style, back and forwards. They're all perfect disposals to people. You're not under any pressure, and I was the guy you're kicking it to because nobody in the opposition cares if you're not making any ground. But poor old Ben, who's flinging his body around, gets deducted points when the ball doesn't go to a teammate. He played very well, Ben Cunnington. So Ben Cunnington's 39 out of, well, given that the top player on the ground was Petrie with 131, is not a true reflection on how Ben played the game. Not a good day for the Tigers. Let's have a quick look at Melbourne versus Sydney. And this was a game that...
It was very similar to the Fremantle-Essendon game, Mark.
It was similar to the Fremantle-Essendon game. And for Melbourne, there was the bright spot of Stephen Stretcher's boy, Billy, kicking a goal. I think it might have been with his first kick in football. The only problem was... But it might have been Melbourne's only goal for about 55 minutes of footy. So,
and great to see. Stephen came across from Melbourne to Fitzroy. Gave Fitzroy some really good service towards the end of his career. Charming bloke, good footballer, terrific bloke. So I'm feeling old.
I
coached his dad.
He coached his dad. I get a strong sense of Sydney's cue in the rack at the end of the game, blowing things out a bit, but there was a real tendency just after half-time for Paul Roos to slide back into what he did against Sydney last year and look for some damage control. Hogan was pushed up the ground.
Yep.
Dawes seemed injured, so his impact on the game was...
Off the game. Yeah, he was injured.
His impact on the game was impacted upon from the moment he stepped out on the field, which I guess is something that needs to be worked out by the match committee and fitness staff. It's not acceptable, I think, in the modern game to have somebody that shouldn't be out there. Tom McDonald had a really interesting battle with Buddy Franklin.
That was good.
It was a
good
battle.
They couldn't cover Tippett.
But that was the problem.
Yeah, they're undersized. And Lyndon Dunn does a great job.
Therein lay the problem. Lyndon Dunn's a trier. And you've got to admire Tom McDonald for... Lance likes running his opponents into the dust and then using his strength. Much like Riewoldt, who relies on aerobic punishment, Lance can add another layer when he's fully fit of, right, we've both run a long way, now let's go one-on-one for a mark, or let's go one-on-one for a physical contest, and he can't be beaten. You know, Tom McDonald is as good a player as there is to play on Franklin or Riewoldt. with the right support, he's going to be the centre of a good defence because he's a very good player.
Just to discuss your point about Cunnington, Mick's on the mark. Cunnington's disposal efficiency was only 41%. That's why they get marked down, because they don't get the ball 30 metres in space.
It's where he got it that matters.
It's where he got it. Mick, you're right, Mick. Look, we can't argue with stats, but when you get it in traffic and you've got three or four blokes hanging off you and you're trying to push off them and you throw it on the boot or get it on the boot, I suppose that's the difference between a player that plays Bruce Reid football, is on the outside, and is a designated kicker in the side. Cunnington is a designated extractor. That's how I see it, but I can't argue with your stats. But sometimes, you know, these fantasy points are just...
A pure fantasy. Just one last one before before we go to the break. One of your alumni, one of your graduating class,
yes,
was, I thought it had a
good game,
step up game, maybe a breakout game for the Demons, Christian Salem. I really liked him.
Yeah, he was on. Young Heaney got injured. Yeah, not a breakout game. He's been pretty good. Yeah. I reckon they've been pleased with him. He's got a way to go. But the duel I liked was, and it didn't last long enough, I was hoping for the Heaney-Salem duel to go on for some considerable time, because that would have been worth watching for many, many reasons. So he's going all right.
In due course. Off the SMS, learn how the points work before commenting. I know exactly how the points work, mate. I've been involved in fantasy football in various forms ever since the day.
We know how the points work.
We know how they...
At least Mick and Keeler put his name to it.
Learn how this works. Watch a game of football. Understand football. Assess football. Rely on points. That's for those who can't fulfil the simple task of the first three. Watch, observe.
What's the point of points? What's it mean?
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Watch the game and assess.
That's what
we
do.
You don't need points, people. You don't need points. All you need is SEN.